This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I'm Mike Vardy.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Meal planning is important because it prevents us from being a disappointed wreck when dinner time comes around and we have no clue what to make, or even if we have the ingredients to make the meal. It's a time and a money saver, but most importantly, it frees up valuable brain space. Creating a meal plan prepares us for the week to come and gives us peace of mind that we're organized and can feed ourselves and our family. That's why I do it, and that's why Plan to Eat helps me do it. Your subscription includes access to the Plan to Eat website and fully featured mobile apps on iOS and Android. And Plan to Eat gives you the tools to clip and organize recipes from any website, the ones your family loves and that fit your dietary preferences and needs. And you can create a meal plan around your schedule. Then what happens is the Plan to Eat software automatically creates an organized shopping list based on your plan. So sign up for your free trial at plantoeat.com/timecrafting. That's plantoeat.com/timecrafting. The coupon will be automatically applied to your account and can be used when you're ready to subscribe. It's valid for new customers only. Give Plan to Eat a try today.
And this is the Productivityist Podcast. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy. And this week, Grant Baldwin returns. We talk about speaking adventures. We talk about his process behind building his talks. We talk about the different types of talks he likes to do. How many talks should one have? And this is an episode that isn't just for people who want to speak for a living or who are speaking for a living. It's for people who are afraid of speaking or need to put together presentations and want to know maybe how many they should have in the bag and so on and so forth. So let's just get to it. Here is my discussion once again with Grant Baldwin as he returns to the Productivityist Podcast for a second time here on, as I mentioned, the Productivityist Podcast. Enjoy. I'd like to welcome Grant Baldwin to the Productivityist Podcast once again. Grant, thanks for joining us.
Dun, 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 dun. I feel like there should be some like pyros or smoke or something. Like, as a speaker, I always wish that I would get an entrance like that, but I never do.
You know, it's funny. One of the things that when I was designing a one-man show based on my eventualism character, the old productivity parody guy that I did, I actually had stylized the entrance as a pro wrestling entrance. So I had like the countdown, like Chris Jericho is one of my favorite wrestlers. So I'd have like the countdown and then, you know, the lights would go up and I'd smoke. Yeah, it was ridiculous, but that's almost what you would expect.
I'll tell you this. I had an event a couple years ago. I was speaking at a freshman orientation event where basically they had 6,000 freshmen that come to campus, and they were just trying to like jack them up and make them excited that they made a good decision to take out thousands of dollars in debt to come to that school. So I'm speaking, and there's a lot going on in the session just to like hype up the night. And so they had the mascot for the school, big school, comes like rappelling in from the ceiling, like in this big, like their big basketball arena, comes like rappelling down and like with the pyros and the smoke and everything. And so the gal who had booked me, I'm standing right next to her watching this. I was like, can I come in like that? Like, how do I get that gig? So, but nonetheless, they just say my name and I walk out on stage. So it's a much less theatrical.
Oh, I mean, for me, it was very much along the lines of I wanted to do it just to show the pomp and circumstance that can surround it. Because have you seen speakers come out to stuff like that before?
Like typically, if it happens, it's like the speaker had nothing to do with it. It was more just the event was wanting to do something cool or different, and so if they want to throw some bells and whistles in, cool. Like most speakers aren't opposed to it. So yeah, it happens from time to time.
Now I want to talk today about process, like your process and stuff like that, because not just in building of talks and building of presentations, but you just finished a digital summit not too long ago as we're recording this. How there's a real, I don't want to say renaissance with digital summits, because it's kind of it's a fairly new thing, but it seems as if there's a lot of them going on right now, basically because it eliminates the travel. It's easier to get, I would imagine, to get people to commit to them because they can do them from the comfort of their home or their office or whatever. What was the process of putting that thing together? First off, what gave you the idea? And then secondly, how did that start to come together for you?
Yeah, so in terms of the idea, it started with a conversation that I had with a buddy of mine, Chandler Bolt, and he had just done one last year and then finished up another one this year. And so we had been talking about it, and he was just talking about kind of how it moved the needle in his business. I thought, well, that'd be interesting. I hadn't seen anyone. I'd seen a bunch of summits done, but I hadn't seen anyone do one specifically for speakers. And so I thought that it could be a fun project. So it took us a couple months of just kind of scoping it out. And I think that's something that you really teach and something that you live. So it's not like, oh, we have this idea on Friday that we're going to do a summit or a speech or a webinar or whatever, and Monday morning, like, we just hope it all works out and comes together. So it was probably, let me think, about 4 or 5 months of planning in terms of, by the time like we started the summit, we had 41 different speakers. All of the speakers' interviews were about 30 to 45 minutes each. They were all done by video. They were all pre-recorded. So by the time we started the summit, and started promoting the summit in kind of we started promoting like mid August or so. And by the time we started promoting it, we'd already recorded everything. Everything was done. All the emails for the entire thing were written. Everything was queued up and ready to go. And so a lot of it came down to, from the beginning, of kind of just mapping out, all right, from beginning to end, let's just brain dump everything possible that's going to go into it. What are the emails that we need to write? Let's make a list of, we made a list of 100 potential speakers and kind of whittled it down from there. What are the days we're going to run this, and how many speakers we're going to have per day? Which speakers we're going to have per day? Are we going to sell something on the front end or the back end? What does that look like? Do we want the speakers to promote, and what do we need to provide to them to promote, and what's the upside to them to promoting? And so just thinking through all these different logistical pieces up front, really, really made a big difference whenever it comes time to execute. And I think, that's been a thing that not just with a summit, but just in business in general, and even with a speech, is like beginning with the end in mind and kind of just reverse engineering from there and beginning to create your plan. And like, I think we get this with so many other aspects of life. Like the analogy I always like to use is like a road trip. You know, if you're going to go on a road trip, like you know where you probably have a good idea of where you're going, and before you even leave the parking lot, you've pulled up on Google Maps or something, some maybe old school physical map, to figure out, here's point A, here's point B, what's the best possible way to get from here to there? And yet whenever it comes to like business or projects, sometimes we just think, no, I'll just kind of like, I'll figure it out as I go, and hopefully it all just magically works out. And like, that's just a horrible way to run a business. That's a horrible way to execute on any type of project. So we just spend a lot of time up front just like mapping out everything we possibly could think of. And at that point, like just like the road trip, then it's not thinking about, oh crap, do I turn here? Do I turn there? Yeah, there's going to be like detours and construction and roadblocks that come up. But for the most part, it's like, I just follow the map. Like, we made the map, not just follow it.
Now, that the nice thing about that is you've got a template now. So you could do kind of the e-myth stuff where you can work, you could pass this on to others. You could pass it on to, you know, anyone that you're working with in your team and say, hey, we're going to do this again, and then just tweak it as necessary, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So now that we've got, now that we've got those templates, now that we've got the emails, yeah, it's a lot of, if we're going to do it again, it's a lot of just, you know, tweaking bits and pieces of it. But the general framework, you know, we've got done. And I think that's the case with, again, a lot of different things. So for example, when it comes to speaking, I think one misconception about speakers is that they're getting different talks every time that they speak. And no, that's not the case. Like, typically, if I'm speaking, I'm giving a talk that I've done before, and oftentimes I've done many times before. So a lot of the events that I've been hired for, I'm giving some variation of the same talk that I always give. Why? Because that talk is really, really dialed in. It's really, really polished. They don't want to see me like trying to like come up with it on the fly or make something up that I don't know if it's going to work or not. And so each time I give that talk, it gets better and better, but also it becomes easier and easier to deliver because it just we've done it. We're a lot more polished with it, and we know how it's going to go. And so it becomes a little easier each time you do it.
Right, right, right. Let's dive into the construction of a talk because a lot of my listeners. I mean, we know you're a speaker. We've had you on before, but the idea of constructing a talk and deciding, okay, it's actually interesting as we're recording this. I'm doing a talk later today, so it's like I'm going to take all these tips and steal them. But how do you when you frame a talk? First off, do you frame a talk based on the needs of a client in particular, so a customized one, or do you say, okay, here are the X number of talks that I do? And I will, so I've got these templates I can work with. Now let me modify it to suit your audience. Do you sometimes just say, okay, I'm going to create an absolutely brand new one just for either my own edification to spice things up or just to make it, you know, extra, quote, special for the client?
Yeah, I would say it's more of kind of working off of a template or a menu, basically, is a lot of times the way we think of it. So think of it like if you're going to go to a restaurant. You know, if you and I go to lunch, Mike, we sit down for a lunch, and the waiter walks up and asks, hey, what would you guys like to eat? Well, I mean, we'd like to see a menu. It's like, well, we don't have menus here. We can cook anything you want. Then you and I are immediately going to assume, like, no, you can't. Like, this place is not going to let's go somewhere else, right? Because there are going to be some things that they can do that are really, really good. And that's their specialties and go-tos. And there's some things they're like, we don't do those things. You know, if you want that cuisine, or if you want that type of food, go down the road. There's plenty of other options for that. And I think that's the same thing is true with the speaker. So as a speaker, if you're someone that's like, well, I can speak to anybody about anything. It's like, no, you can't. That's not true. Like, so there's going to be some things you can do really, really well and other things that you shouldn't do. So as a speaker, I think it's important to really dial in. Like, this is what I speak about, and so that you've got literally, I'm talking like 1, 2, 3 talks at the most, and like those are the talks that you give. And so anytime you're speaking, you may tweak a few little things from those, but for the most part, like that's the choice. People pick you because they want your best stuff, not stuff that you're kind of making up and that you hope magically works out. In the same way that when I go, you know, if we go to lunch at a restaurant, like I want the best thing on the menu because it's the thing that you guys have cooked hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of times. And you know that thing, you know that recipe so stinking well, and it's just good. It just really, really works. That's what clients want. And so just a little secret here is that professional speakers, like the best speakers you've ever seen, they don't have 100 different talks that they give. They literally have 1 or 2 talks. That story that you saw that's so dialed in and polished and it felt like it was just off the cuff, I promise you that the best speakers in the world have told that story hundreds and hundreds of times. Mike, I know that you know you and I geek out on comedy, and it's the exact same way. I think there's a ton of parallels there that comedians on stage are like, oh, it seems like they're just making it up on the – no. Like they've given that bit. They've told that story. They've delivered that punchline so many times. So I think another good way to think of this is let's just go with the comedian analogy for a second. Mm-hmm. I think whenever you go see a comedian, they have they have their different bits, they have their different stories, they have their different things that they do, and those things could go in a different sequence. They may go in a different order from night to night or from set to set, but you're going to get like 90% of it is going to be the same from one show to the next. Now, again, so there may be some nuanced differences there. Talking to the city that I'm in, you know, a lot of times like they'll open up with a couple minutes of just something local that's to them, right? That's only going to work there in that context. In the same way that 90% of the talk may be the same from place to place that you may go speak, but you may be tweaking a few things to that company or to that industry or to that conference and to who you are specifically speaking to. But the bulk of it is going to stay the same because, again, you know that work. So, again, I would not recommend that you just do a new talk for everybody that you speak to, but you got just a couple of talks that you do, and you can use those in kind of different contexts.
So when it comes to building a talk, how do you go about doing it? Like, so you've decided, okay, I've got these five talks. And I've got probably about how many talks do you have, do you figure, offhand?
Well, and I think another way, like, I guess another way to look at this would be that I've got two main keynotes that I
right,
do.
Right.
But then another, I think another way to look at this is almost like modules, or kind of basically like chunks. And again, you can go back to the comedy analogy of those modules, like these things could be used in different contexts. Regardless of what it is that you're speaking about. I'll give you a quick example. I've got a buddy of mine that I was talking to the other day, and he's a $30,000 keynote speaker, does 100 plus events a year, is a bigwig speaker, is extremely, extremely good. And he basically, he has three different keynotes that he does. And he says, you can, like, any company, any event planner can pick one of these three, but I promise you, I'm going to tell this one particular story. I'm going to tell it regardless. So he's got a couple, like, he's got this one, you know, story or module that's like, I'm going to use this no matter what, because I know it works. But the other things, the other modules I can kind of build around it may be different. So I think it's not even necessarily like I have this one talk. It's more just kind of like, again, like with the comedian example, I've got all of these bits that I know these bits work, and I can pick and choose. You know, if I got 30 bits that work, I need, you know, 15 of them for this show, and I can kind of pull some. I know these 15 work well together, and they kind of segue well together. And so I think that's kind of the way you could approach it.
Okay, so let's talk about the – so you and, like, how you say you have about two main keynotes, right? And then you have
– right.
Do you, and you do workshop stuff as well, right? Or just generally keynotes?
Yeah, I, a lot of what I do is with keynotes, but then I do a few workshops. And I think with workshop, one of the differences here between keynotes and workshops is keynotes are typically going to be more broad, and workshops are going to be more narrow. So, for example, let's say that you're going to – what's the group you're speaking to today?
Local group of business, you know, small business owners here in Victoria.
Okay, small business owner. So if you're going to go and you're speaking to them on what?
It's basically on overarching productivity practices. So how to get things done more effectively and efficiently.
Okay, so a keynote, a good example for that, you're speaking to everyone, you're doing kind of a keynote type of format, and so it's got to be broad enough to appeal to the entire audience. So if you're speaking to entrepreneurs about productivity, productivity is going to be typically a broad topic that's going to work well in that context. So a workshop is going to be more appealing for a smaller segment. So a workshop may be something along the lines of specifically how to use Google Calendar to enhance your productivity, you know, or some little niche subset thing. That again, not everyone's going to, it's not going to appeal to everybody, but to a certain subset, it's going to work. So what I typically do whenever it comes to a keynote is I typically will structure it to use a lot more stories. I use more humor doing that. It's more like, I would say, again, more broad and kind of more, it's typically less tactical and more just kind of big picture. Whereas if I'm doing the, like in your case, you might talk about why productivity matters and how productivity can affect you. And if you dial this stuff in, how it can make a difference. And then in the workshop, I would talk about more the nuts and bolts and kind of in the trenches of, you know, here's my 10 favorite hacks for using Google Calendar, you know, and the specifics of how you can actually execute on that. So that's typically how I would differentiate between the two. So in terms of actually like creating the talk, again, calling back to what we were talking about earlier, I think it's always important to begin with the end in mind because every one of us, we've heard speakers and you get to the end of it and you're kind of like, you know, they were a good speaker or a bad speaker or whatever, but like, I have no idea what the point of that was. Like you and I don't want to say the name of the conference, you and I were just at a conference together, and I know one particular speaker. Were you at the opening session?
Yes, I think so. What was the I think so.
It was a big wig financial speaker.
No, I didn't go to that one. No, I didn't go.
All right, anyway,
I heard about it though.
So that was one where it's like, you know, he's a fine speaker. Like, it wasn't necessarily a bad speaker, but we got to the end and you're just like, I have no clue what that was about. I just listened to it. I have no clue.
I don't mean to cut in, but I think that sometimes what happens is, and you and I've been to plenty of conferences where that probably happens, where it's not that they're not a good speaker, but it's like they go in ego might be the right term, but it's my job is to go in and inspire people. But the problem is that you better know your audience, right? Like, you better know, like, and if it's unclear, or if it's, and I mean, there's been tons of them where I've gone in and said, you know, where, you know, what in the heck were they talking about? Like, yeah, they were great. They threw in a bunch of humor, and even I've fallen prey to that. Like, I've had some, I've had some talks where I've done it, and, you know, 66%, 70% of the comments that I would get were great, and I had a really high speaker score. But then the other comments, and of course, you're always going to get people leaving. The people who leave comments are the ones who have something to say that may not necessarily be appealing, because that's generally that's the internet right there for you. It's like, you know, tried to rely on humor too much, wasn't necessarily, didn't quite get all the, and it's like, okay, that's great feedback. But there's some people who just, yeah, and there's some people who go up and speak, and they rely on their ability to speak well. But if you hang your hat on that too much, you can lose the message in the process, right?
No, absolutely. Totally. And I think that, like, that was the case in, like, this example here. And again, I don't want to throw anybody into the bus, but
yeah.
But basically, like, he was as a speaker, and, like, his credentials were good for this conference and for this audience. But he got to the end of it, and he was just kind of like, what was the point of that? Like, I don't even know what he was talking about. So I think, like, a really, really basic first step is, like, again, going back to what we talked about at the beginning, but just beginning with the end in mind, so that you are super, super clear by the end of the talk, this is what I want the audience to do, to think, to feel. I want them to do something as a result of it. So anytime you're sitting in an audience as an audience member and as a speaker, think this through. But audiences are always thinking through two questions. So what and now what? So what and now what? So what? Like, why should I care about this? Why does this appeal to me? Why does this matter to me? And now what? What am I supposed to do as a result of it? So there's some talks that you come away and you just, there's a speaker I heard actually just this past weekend, and we came away and my wife and I were talking about it. I was like, he just made you feel good. Like, he just made you feel like really, really happy, you know? And so that's fine. That's if that's the goal of the talk. You know, I just felt really good after hearing him speak. There's other talks where it's like, oh, I need to go do something different. There's some tangible change that I need to make. So, you know, for example, at this conference we're referencing, a buddy of mine gave a quick talk, and he was talking about taking a free day. And just take one 24-hour period off, right? Yep. And so he gave that talk. So it was very, very clear by the end of the talk, you knew what the one thing was that you were supposed to do differently. So again, begin with the end in mind of what it is that you are wanting the audience to think or do or feel as a result of the talk. So I think that's kind of the first point. So from there, what I would typically do is, all right, I know where I'm going. I know where the destination is, where I'm going to take the audience. Now I want to just brainstorm and brain dump anything and everything topic. So this could be stories, it could be illustrations, it could be analogies, it could be stats, it could be charts, graphs, it could be principles, it could be points, books, research, it could be any number of things. Just no filter, I'm just doing a brain dump related to this topic. So it could be on a whiteboard, it could just be on Evernote, it could be a paper and pencil. It could be any number of, like the method isn't the point, but just no filter. I'm just going to brain dump on this topic. From there, then I'm going to start to create some type of structure. And structure for a talk can be different. I think that sometimes there's this misconception of you have to have 3 points, or you have to have an odd number of points because, you know, psychologically audiences connect better. I don't know about that crap. I think there's really, like, there's no right or wrong way to create a talk. So there's going to be some talks that may just be like kind of an introduction and then 3 points to it and then a conclusion. And that's kind of a typical format. So if you're going to do that, just trying to figure out, all right, I know the end of where I want to take the audience. So what would be maybe 1 or 2 or 3 points that I want to hit there? And you're starting to just basically create kind of just a rough outline of where you want to, like, again, think about the roadmap. I know the destination, there's a lot of ways I could go to get from point A to point B. So you're kind of figuring that out. And then from there, you can start to kind of flesh out the outline of okay, this story that I know is going to work, it would work really, really well with this point. And this illustration is going to work well here. What I typically, and again, there's no right or wrong way here, but what I typically try to do is on an individual point, if I'm trying to make, I will present the point, talk about, kind of expound on the point, talk about why it matters, tell some type of story. I think stories are extremely, extremely powerful for speakers. Mm-hmm. I'll tell some type of story related to that. to kind of connect the dots. I try to use a lot of first person stories, stories that actually happened to me versus, you know, let me tell you about this story about this company from the 1900s. And here's how the productivity company Franklin Covey was started. Like, I mean, that may be fascinating in some context, but I think people just relate better to something that happened to me and here's the change I made and here's how it affected, you know, in some way. So those types of stories. And then the application of it, of now what? What are you going to do as a result of it? So that's kind of how I walk through those points there. So I've got kind of my rough outline that I've started to kind of flesh out. Now from here, this is just my personal thing. What I do is I will actually manuscript out the entire talk. Right? You're not creating something that you need to memorize, you need to know verbatim or word for word. The point is that you think through the entire talk so that you're thinking through your transitions. You're thinking through how you're going to tell a story. You know, Mike, if I were to ask you, tell me about whenever you got engaged to your wife, right? If you could tell me that story right now, just off the cuff, but if you sat down and had 15 minutes to write it out, you could probably come up with more details to it. You could probably just tell the story better because you just put some thought into it.
Yeah, I want to infuse humor into that. So, because that's my go-to, having done stand-up. It's like, okay, here's the story. Right. How do I make it? That's always been my go-to, is to try to infuse humor into things, because that's just the nature of what I've done in the past. And so, yeah, but you're right. Like, I could tell it off the cuff. I've done it so many times. I've actually told that story. I've done it so many times now that it works and I can play with it. But I think that initially, like you said, you're right. You got to sit down and kind of map it out, because if you don't, then details get lost. The story isn't told as well. And then you walk off the stage with a bit of like, oh, I missed that point, or oh, I could have done that right there.
Totally. So you're thinking it through. And again, it's not a script. So I'll manuscript it out. And then from there, I think the thing that most speakers at this point fail to do is just practice and rehearse the crap out of it. Just go over it time and time and time again. I spend hours and hours and hours just talking to myself, literally just talking out loud and doing the talk like I would give it from stage. So thinking through, thinking through how I'm going to present it, thinking through, transitions, thinking through even just like voice inflection and or tone and gestures and movement. What's the best way to make this point or to emphasize, you know, this piece of the story? And just thinking through all of that stuff ahead of time. Like, again, another little trick here is that the best speakers in the world do not get up on stage and just wing it. They don't just make it up. They don't just shoot from the hip. They have spent so much time going over the material and practicing and preparing so that by the time they do get up, it's really dialed in. It's really, really polished. So that's again, just kind of like big picture. That's kind of what I would do from beginning to end in terms of, all right, I know I got to give a talk and, you know, and next month, what's the talk going to be about? Big picture. What's the beginning with the end in mind? Brainstorming, creating kind of a rough outline, kind of fleshing out the outline, and then manuscripting it and just practicing the crap out of it.
Do you think there's such a thing as rehearsing too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely possible, but I think most of the time we fail on the other side. I think it's a good example is like going to take a test. I mean, think back to, you know, high school or college or university and, you know, the days that you'd show up for a test. If you didn't study at all and you show up and the teacher or professor starts passing out a test, you're going to feel panicked. You're going to feel nervous. And that's the way a lot of speakers are, like, I just made a couple notes on a napkin, or, you know, I wrote down a couple thoughts and I'm just going to go up and give a talk. And I feel really, really nervous. Well, you should feel nervous. You didn't put any work in, right? Versus like, no, I studied, I prepared, I did the work. So I show up to take the test. I feel ready. I feel super, super confident. And so I noticed that myself, that whenever I get ready to speak, I think you always have some level of nerves. And I think that's okay. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But if I'm feeling nervous because I don't know how this is going to go, in the sense that like, I didn't do my part and I didn't prepare, then I should feel super nervous. I should feel like, oh crap, I hope this goes well. But like, if it doesn't, it's totally 100% my fault. So I think that the more you practice, the more comfortable you feel. Also, I think it gives you, I guess, in kind of a, kind of a weird way of thinking about it, but it gives you more, you feel more liberty to, or feel more freedom to go different places with your material. Like, there's sometimes you can tell people that like they've practiced it and they are so deep in their own head, just thinking about what the next line is that they're supposed to say. And part of the fun of speaking is being able to present what you prepare, but also being present in the moment. Meaning that if something in the room happens, that you can acknowledge it, that you can go with it, and it's not going to just completely derail your talk. And I think that's what, Mike, I think that's what makes a good comedian too, is mm-hmm. that the comedians that like, they're doing their bit, they're doing the story that they've told hundreds of times, but then they did something that was just clearly off the cuff, that was just for this room, that just happened in this moment, and it feels extremely authentic and real, but they feel at liberty to go with that and to go down that trail because they're confident in their material. I know if I go down that path, I know I can think of a segue or a transition to get back on track of where I need to be, versus like, oh crap, I can't, I'd love to go down there, but I don't know how I'm going to lose my place. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you get stuck in a rabbit hole and you're like, okay, where was I? And it's fine and you know what? The best comedians, when that happens, they actually will admit, well, now where was I? Like they'll actually do that. Totally. And that actually, if they do it charmingly enough, they get a laugh.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's a great thing to just remember is sometimes there's kind of this, when you're presenting, you feel like it's this us versus them, like the audience wants you to fail. Like they don't. No. Like if I'm going to go sit in the talk, I want you to do good. I want you to be interesting. I don't want to waste my time there. So remember at the end of the day, like when you're presenting, that you are one human talking to a group of other humans. So I think you're exactly right that if you forget your spot, like, or you take a little segue and you cut. I've done that several times. Like, oh, what were we talking about? Like, where were we going with this? You know, because it just reminds them and reminds you, like, hey, I'm human. I'm vulnerable. I make mistakes. I forget my place at times. But I think the more comfortable you feel with the material, the easier it is to take some, to take some liberty there with other like segues or things that you want to do and just kind of riff.
Grant, this has been awesome. It's been great to have you on again. Where can people find you and your work online so that they can learn how to be, a bit more productive when it comes to building talks, presentations, and so much more?
Yeah, especially on all the speaking stuff that we've covered, people can check out thespeakerlab.com. Again, thespeakerlab.com. We got a podcast over there, some different online free trainings and free workshops. So yeah, we'd love people to check it out. Again, thespeakerlab.com.
Thanks again, Grant, for joining me this week.
Thanks, buddy.
And that's it for this week's episode of the show. I'd like to thank Grant Baldwin for joining me once again. I'd like to thank John Polstra for producing the show as he does each and every week. I'd like to thank all of you for joining me. Don't forget to check out the show notes to see if there's anything there that you want to explore further. And don't forget to tune in next week as I come back with another brand new, shiny episode of the podcast. So until then, I'm your host, Mike Vardy, host of the Productivityist podcast and founder of Productivityist, reminding you to stop guessing, start going.